Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Chris Haft from MLB.com as we talk about his book, If These Walls Could Talk, about the San Francisco Giants in part two of our conversation. But before we talk to Chris, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now let's get to the conversation with Chris Haft from MLB.com. Well, Chris Haft is one of the hardest working journalists really in baseball. All the stories that he puts out on MLB.com, and somehow found time to write a book, If These Walls Could Talk, about the San Francisco Giants, stories from the Giants dugout, locker room, and press box. So I want to talk to you about it, Chris, and I can't wait to read this book in its entirety. You go through the World Series years. First of all, how much fun was it to, you know, just reminisce about these seasons? You had all those notes put together from covering the three World Series. So how much did you enjoy it?
Joe, I enjoyed it a lot. It's a book I kind of started writing in a way when I was 9 or 10. I grew up a Giants fan. I grew up in Menlo Park. My dad would drive me to 20, 25 miles to games. I'm old enough to have seen, I'm dating myself here, and I don't mind, I'm old enough to have seen, you know, Willie Mays, Juan Marichal, and Willie McCovey, who I, you know, also devoted chapters to in the book. I'm old enough to have seen them play, and play, you know, fairly well, even though they were up in years. As far as the World Series goes, of course, the three playoff runs, it was tough not to try to rehash everything. My publishers, Triumph Books, based in Chicago, wanted an anecdotally based book, you know, not just a historical recitation, not a trivial who's who or something like that. So, you know, I tried to personalize each year by telling, you know, stories about certain guys who blossomed, and, you know, maybe look back at the games they played or pitched that made a big difference in those years, those three playoff years. And so, that's what I tried to do.
Well, that 2010 team, I mean, that's the team that got it all started. And that was quite a collection of players, because you did have Buster Posey in his rookie year, and his steady influence was just getting underway, and Madison Bumgarner was a youngster. But you had those players that came aboard, the Pat Burrells of the world, you know, guys who really had strong personalities, Cody Ross and what he did in the postseason. How unique was that season and those players?
You know, Joe, just about you could point to every player who played, you know, an appreciable number of games for the San Francisco Giants that year, and you can say they wouldn't have won without him, or they wouldn't have won without him. And you could point to every single one, even a Nate Sherholtz, even a Mike Fontenot, who they got late in the season, and say they wouldn't have won without him, they wouldn't have won without him. It was that they received that kind of, team-wide, contributions.
More with Chris Haft from MLB.com in just a moment. The next time you're on your way to a Giants game, stop by Town's End Restaurant and Bakery for breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., or for brunch on the weekend from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Celebrating their 26th year, family-run and cozy, Townsend Restaurant and Bakery captures the spirit of San Francisco with homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. They're serving cage-free Petaluma eggs and have been organic since well before organic became mainstream. Consistent quality, 4-star Google reviews, and great service from loyal employees that have been there for over 20 years. Townsend Restaurant and Bakery, a Buster Posey home run away from AT&T Park, right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco.
In 2012, when Melky Cabrera was lost for this team, I just thought it was over. I'm like, there's no way. They're not even going to make the playoffs. They don't have Melky Cabrera in the middle of their lineup. But they did it. They made the playoffs. They pulled off miracles in the postseason that year. How improbable was that year?
Extremely. Yeah, when Melky was suspended, I thought that was it. But then a lot of people stepped up, and of course they made two outstanding trades. Getting Marco Scudero from Colorado and Hunter Pence from Philadelphia. I mean, that made enormous difference.
Absolutely. And then 2014 is really known as the Madison Bumgarner World Series, but, you know, others obviously contributed to it. How much in that chapter when you're writing about 2014 is Bumgarner and just, you know, players talking about him?
That's just it. It was possible to devote just pretty much the whole thing to him because, as you just said, he did win it almost single-handedly, with that single hand being the left hand. He was just incredible. I mean, he big games, he would pitch these big games and just dominate the opposition in these big games. I mean, they're supposed to be close games and hotly contested games. And, you know, maybe they were, you know, internally for the Giants and their opponents. But, you know, on what played out on the field was, just a one-sided Giants triumph because of Bumgarner.
Yeah, he was superhuman that year. In addition to the championship years, you have chapters in there about Candlestick. I can't wait to read that because I grew up going to Candlestick Park myself. Barry Bonds, I mean, there's somebody who I had a chance to cover when I was at Sirius XM and the home run chase in 07, and certainly an unusual guy and a guy who was so much fun to watch. You just couldn't miss his at-bats. What kind of relationship did you develop with him, and what did you glean from him in being able to write a chapter in the book?
I did not, I'll be the first to admit, I did not develop much of a relationship with Barry. Most of what I wrote was kind of on the, not outside looking in, but, kind of gazing from semi-afar. And not to bore people with how we do things at MLB.com, but, you know, we have a writer, Barry Bloom, who is on very good terms with Barry Bonds.
Oh, yeah.
And Barry Bloom did most of the coverage of Barry Bonds, and so I didn't have a whole lot of contact, really, one on one with Barry Bonds at all. But I began that chapter by painting a picture of what went on at the celebration of Jim Davenport's life. Some would call it a memorial, but they wanted to call it a celebration. After Davy passed away in February of 2016, I think they waited till the Marlins came when Barry was then their hitting coach. That might have been later April, May. I forget off the top of my head when it was. I think it was May. And so Barry proceeded to speak about Jim Davenport and about the families, you know, the Davenport and the Bonses, you know, with his dad, Bobby, you know, befriending Jim. You know, they were the best of friends. And, you know, Barry went on to speak about that, and it was just a side of Barry you never saw.
Uh-huh.
And it was just stunning. If he was this way more often, I think life would be a lot more different. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so I just tried to convey that scene to people.
Does he get in the Hall of Fame? I mean, it seems like there's momentum for him and Roger Clemens.
I think, Joe, I think there's a lot of momentum for him and Roger Clemens, especially him. And so I think he'll make it here in two or three more ballots.
And he's going to get a plaque on the Giants Walk of Fame. Who knows, maybe a statue someday at AT&T Park. Now, he played at both AT&T and Candlestick, and I've mentioned the chapter that you have at Candlestick. And, you know, for me, my memories of Candlestick are just freezing, you know, coming from San Jose, wearing a down jacket. Great, some good baseball. I mean, Jack Clark to Will Clark. And I guess the one series that really jumps out at me was 1982 when they went right down to the wire with the Braves and the Dodgers, and they lost on that Friday night to the Dodgers. Rick Monday at that home run. I was at that game. And then Joe Morgan, of course, ruins it for the Dodgers on the Sunday. What were the best memories that you were able to come up with for Candlestick? And I would imagine there were some funny stories about the ballpark.
Yeah, I talked to players about it. I didn't have a whole lot of funny stories. I mean, for me, it was a magical place, as crazy as that sounds, because to quote Dave Righetti, that's where the Giants played. So, I thought it was a, even though it was dreadful. I mean, let's face it, it was dreadful. It was cold. It was inadequate, as far as a lot of amenities goes. But, it was what we had. And so, I don't know if I like that you mentioned that series. That was quite a series. I don't know if I have one. Well, maybe, I think there was a series they had in May 1978. That concluded with a game on Memorial Day where Mike Ivey hit a grand slam.
Off Don against, Sutton.
Off Don Sutton. That was quite a series. And I remember another series against the Dodgers. It seems like it's always the Dodgers, the ones that are memorable. there was another series where, it included a no-hitter by Jerry Royce of L.A. This was in 1980. The Giants were on contention, but of course every Giant-Dodger game was hotly contested. Jerry Royce no-hit the Giants, and then a couple days later, I think in between there was an extra inning game, typical Giants-Dodgers. I did not go to that game, but I went to the no-hitter, and then I went to the Sunday game. It was actually two games. It was a rare doubleheader against the Dodgers. I believe there had been a rainout, so they wanted to make up for the rainout, and in the first game, Willie McCovey, who had announced his retirement like about a week earlier or something like that, won the game with a pinch hit double. And afterward, there was a very, very long, very, very loud standing ovation for McCovey, and people prolonging the ovation until he came out and took a curtain call. Uh-huh. And he was really, really reluctant to do that, but he did it. And it created one of the, a great moment in San Francisco Giants history.
But it's funny that you mentioned that Mike Ivey grand slam, because that's probably my favorite hit of Giants history. My friend Stu, who hopefully is listening, he recorded that, and we must have listened to the play-by-play call 100 times, and we had it memorized. I mean, we knew exactly what was said there by Lon Simmons, and we even knew that Dorothy Cervantes of Livermore won a Chevy Chevette because of that grand slam. I mean, how do I remember that name to this day? But it was just so memorable back in 1978.
That's funny, Joe. Yeah, well, it's just, baseball's great at creating these memories, and the great broadcasters are, good at, burning them in our heads. And, I thank the world of Lon Simmons. And, with that Mike Ivey home run, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you can confirm this for me or something. I think Lon got so excited, or things happened so fast, he never said tell it goodbye. It was just hit deep to left, way back, way back, way back. A grand slam.
Yeah, he said way back. A grand slam, Mike Ivey, a grand slam. He never said tell it goodbye. You're right. He got so excited.
Yeah. I mean, when Lon wanted to create excitement, there's nobody better.
Well, the best part of the recording, actually, is my friend jumping up in the air. You could hear his feet landing on the floor because he was so excited about it. But, to finish up, the memories that definitely will stick with everybody besides winning World Series are the no-hitters. And, honestly, Chris, before I started, covering the Giants with SiriusXM, I'd never seen a no-hitter. I called thousands of games in the minor leagues, never got the chance to call a no-hitter or see a no-hitter. And then finally, Jonathan Sanchez throws one. Got to see that. I got to see one of the Lincecum no-hitters. I didn't see the one in San Diego, and I didn't see Matt Cain's perfect game. I wasn't there for that, but there's so many to choose from. I mean, it just was what a run of no-hitters for the Giants, which is just another part of your book and a part of the history that developed, you know, in a great way for San Francisco since 2010.
Unbelievable, Joe. It really was unbelievable. And, you know, I guess this run kind of concluded with Chris Heston's no-hitter, although,
right.
which I did not see because I had to stay at home covering the draft, which was fine. I mean, things even out because I would have missed Lincecum's first no-hitter, but there was a snafu in scheduling, and I did not go to the All-Star game, which was, you know, after that weekend. I did not go to the All-Star game when I was supposed to, but as a result, I got to see Lincecum's no-hitter. So
I'll take that
trade, actually. But, you know, we could have had a few more. I mean, Yusmeiro Petit, one strike away from a perfect game. My gosh.
Right.
You know, it was just an embarrassment of riches there. And maybe the era, so to speak, won't end until Madison Bumgarner pitches one, because I firmly believe we'll see how he comes back from those dirt bike accident injuries now. But firmly believe he'll pitch a no-hitter at some day, you know, someday, some way.
Well, yeah, I think he will. And they're all great stories, but I'll tell you, the Jonathan Sanchez no-hitter, that really was special, because that was, what, 2009? His dad was in attendance, and I don't even know that his dad had ever watched him pitch before.
That's quite a thing. You know, his son finally dragged him, or not dragged him, you know, was able to get him up, get him to the States, and, you know, look what happens. It's just another great coincidence in baseball.
Well, Chris, can't wait to read the book. It's really going to be fun for everybody, If These Walls Could Talk, about the San Francisco Giants. In the meantime, enjoy Pittsburgh and the road trip, and we'll see you when you get back.
Joe, thank you so much for having me.
That's Chris Half from MLB.com. Coming up on Wednesday, we are scheduled to talk with television play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers, Mario Impemba, as the Giants are taking on the Tigers in a three-game series in Detroit this week. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.